8 days later, Brunn debarked at Kaskar Station in the same outfit she'd started in. Corey's ship had no shower, although it did have a functioning toilet. Mostly functioning. She had had plenty of food, sandwiches, soup, tinned stew, and half as much sleep as she needed, because she stood watch with Corey. She knew all about Corey's family, 3 generations backwards and out to 3rd cousins by marriage, and why his family would do anything for Lady Cecilia, including forget that she herself had ever existed and taken a ride on Corey's ship. She knew it would be an insult to tuck an extra 200 credits into one of the cabinets, but she promised to tell Cecilia who had helped her. Her first stop on Kaskar Station was a public restroom, where she paid for a hot shower and sudsed herself thoroughly. She dumped her clothes in a washer and called up the status board on the restroom screen. An outbound passenger ship headed for Greenland, which she knew from Corey's tutoring was more or less the way she wanted to go, would be in the next day. She called up its schedule. 12 days to Greenland, 6 more to Åkerland, 10 to Bascom. At Bascom, she could get direct service to Rockhouse Major, no stops, on a major carrier. That looked good, except that the ship from here got there 1 day late, and the next Rockhouse connection wasn't for 16 days. Damn. Here, she couldn't use Cecilia's influence. But, she looked at herself in the restroom mirror, maybe she could use her own. Or her wits. After all, even after these months, they might be looking for Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. She didn't want to lead them to Lady Cecilia. Not yet. Not until she'd had another competency hearing and regained her legal identity.
Wits, then.
The status board showed 5 ships at this much busier station. None were scheduled passenger ships, but Corey had explained that many freighters, scheduled and unscheduled, carried a few passengers. The big shipping firms had the better accommodations, but were pickier about who they took. The smaller firms, or owner-operator tramp freighters, would take anyone but an obvious criminal, especially if he or she were willing to do some of the less favored chores aboard. 10 hours later, Brunn was aboard the Bucklow Success, shoveling manure. Though most livestock was shipped as frozen embryos, some traveled whole in its mature state. Such a ship was known to crews as a shit shoveler for obvious reasons. The oversized environmental system had been built to handle the bulk and nitrogen load, but someone had to get the stuff from the animal pens into the system. A human and a shovel worked as efficiently as anything else, especially when valuable animals had to be coddled. Brunn's stable experience got her the job, and a free berth. 1/3 of the cargo was horses, heavy drafters. Another 1/3 was hybrid cantaloupes, their long, straight horns cut short and tipped with bulky foam knobs for shipment. The rest were mixed medium and small. 8 pens of dairy goats, 7 of does and 1 of bucks, 16 pens of sheep, 58 cages of pedigreed rabbits, some of them carrying embryos of other species, 60 cages of small fowl, and 30 cages of large. Brunn had expected to be put to work with the horses, but as casual labor, she was assigned wherever there was need. She learned to mix feed for goats and sheep, hose down the cantaloupe pens, change waterers and feeders for rabbits and birds. For 16 days, she spent 12-hour shifts caring for noisy, demanding, smelly critters, and 8 hours of her shift off sound asleep in her surprisingly comfortable bunk. With all the methane production, there was plenty of onboard power generation, and the ship had to carry extra water anyway. Plenty of hot water for showers, an exercise room used mostly by bridge officers, everyone else got plenty of exercise caring for the animals, even a small swimming pool. And in 16 days, Brunn left the ship at Bascom Station. They would have taken her farther. She was hard-working and stayed out of quarrels, and she wasn't afraid of the larger animals, but they weren't going where she wanted to go. She got actual pay, less than her private allowance for the same period, but the first money she had ever earned in her life. She turned in the credit strip the ship's paymaster handed her at the first bank station she saw, and got back a cube representing her present balance in a newly opened Bascom Station account. It did not escape her notice that if she didn't have to spend more than that in her time here, she would not have to touch her own accounts, which might be under surveillance. Bascom Station looked like real civilization. Besides the bank station, which had both automated booths and a couple of windows with live tellers, the first concourse she came to had logos of all the standard travelers' organizations and credit services. She had her cubes, of course, but it would be a challenge, as well as prudent, to make it to Rock House without alerting any watchers. She wouldn't try to use a fake identity, but Brunhilde Charlotte Meager, without her usual wild clothes and credit cubes, might be anyone. She didn't think anyone would be looking for her in the hold of a livestock hauler, for instance. So she bypassed the expensive sectors of Bascom Station, the luxury hotel, the fine restaurants, and got a room at a hostel for transient crew, people who lived on such jobs as shoveling manure and running forklifts in warehouses. She ate at the little cafe two doors down and washed her clothes in a smelly little laundry where the washing machines overflowed at least once a shift. The transient crew hostel had its own version of the status board, with listings of crew openings and comments by those who had worked for different ships. Brun discovered she had a reputation which had preceded her. How, she couldn't figure out. Someone on the Bucklow Success had spread the word that she was a hard worker and trouble-free, so she had offers posted to her mail slot by the time she thought to check it. The rest of her reputation she didn't know about until later. She picked what seemed like the fastest way to Rockhouse Major, a bulk hauler carrying fish protein meal. Two shifts out of Bascom Station, she discovered that "nice kid" was not the label to carry among people who thought "nice" meant naive and helpless. And while she wasn't all that helpless, in proving it, she broke the wrist and nose of the permanent crewman who tried to rape her. In a dispute between permanent and transient crew, transients are always wrong. Brun found herself facing an angry captain, while the first mate pored over her identification and other belongings.
I suppose you can explain why someone named Brun Meager, if that is your real name, would have credit cubes and strips that belong to the Carvino family? Brunhilde Charlotte Meager Carvino, which according to my database is Lord Thornbuckle's youngest daughter? Or do you want to try to tell me you are Lord Thornbuckle's youngest daughter, the one who appears in society papers as Bubbles Carvino? Admittedly, she's blonde, so are you, but that hardly seems adequate. What, you kill her for her papers, or is she wandering around someplace trying to convince a thick-headed planetary militia that she's not some farmer's daughter?
None of the answers that came first seemed likely to help the situation. Brun wondered what Captain Serrano would have done if, as seemed most unlikely, she'd ever been in a similar fix. One thing, she wouldn't make any jokes, such as that her father was a farmer, among other things. A family saying she'd heard since childhood, "When in doubt, tell the truth," came to mind. It might work.
"Those are my papers, sir."
"Respect costs nothing and pays a high dividend," she had heard from her grandmother. She hadn't believed it then, but she had never been at the mercy of someone as angry as the captain looked.
"So you are claiming to be this, Lord Thornbuckle's daughter?"
"Yes, sir."
"You care to explain to me why you're traveling on a freighter carrying fish meal and working your passage when you could buy the whole damn freighter according to your credit rating?"
If they'd done a credit check, then anyone watching might pick up where she was. Nothing to do about it now. She had more urgent problems. The first mate's expression was as forbidding as the captain's, and she'd already heard about his propensities from the relief cook. The truth, but not the whole truth.
"Sir, I wanted to prove I wasn't just a fluffhead like they said."
"The way you broke Slim's wrist, I wouldn't think anyone would call you a fluffhead. Hothead, maybe. How'd you get a reputation as trouble-free on the winter? I thought Joss Haskins was a better judge of character than that."
"Nobody on that ship tried to drag me into a bunk and rape me."
"What's so bad about Slim? Does he have bad breath or what?"
The captain quelled the mate with a look.
"The point is, I have trouble believing Lord Thornbuckle would let his daughter go off working transient crew jobs halfway across Familia's space. Does he know where you are?"
"Well, no, sir."
He would have found out from the yacht's crew where she had been with Lady Cecilia. He had expected her to stay there. She suspected he wouldn't be entirely pleased to know where she was now, nor would her mother.
"My mother would have a cat."
Bubbles eyed the captain, wondering if she could take advantage of that momentary lapse in his anger.
"Tell you what, We can't afford legal trouble of any type. I don't really care who you are, but if you are who your papers say, you've no business pretending to be a commoner. And if you're not Brunhilde Charlotte Meager Carvenough, then her family needs to know someone else is using her papers. This is something for law enforcement to sort out. I'm confiscating your ID and your credit cubes until we arrive at Rock House. Turn them over to the station militia. Do you happen to know the balances of the accounts?
She hadn't looked at them in some time.
Not really, sir. Why?
That admission, she saw, shook his conviction that she was an imposter.
Because you and I and my mate are going to certify the balances as of this date, so you can be sure, or the real Brunhilde Charlotte's family can be sure, that I haven't run off with some of it. I will allow you to send a message to your family, if you wish, charged as an advance on your salary.
Did she wish? She tried to think what the date would be on Rock House. The local date, not universal. Her father might be there for the biennial council meeting. Uncle Serville would be, anyway. And even Buttons might be there. But what could she say? Could she phrase a warning so they would understand it and not get themselves into worse danger? And she really did not want the Crown Minister or his sister Lorenza to know she was on her way. She came down finally on the side of caution. Both kinds. Caution with the captain. Perhaps he'd see that an imposter would hardly send a message to a home that wasn't hers. And with her family, so they couldn't reveal information they didn't have.
I'd like to send a message, but I don't want to tell them when I'm arriving. As you said, my parents would not approve of my, my choice of conveyance.
I'm not prepared to lie for you, young woman.
No, sir. Could you send, "You were right, I'm on my way home," and then, "Love, Brun."
Tell me one thing. Why do the society papers say your name is Carvenough when your papers say it's Meager?
My mother's name is Meager. All the children use the maternal last name on identification until we're 25. It's supposed to be safer.
Ah. Well, Miss Meager, consider yourself warned against any further brawling. You are confined to quarters except when on duty in the galley. I'm taking you off general duty and making you the cook's assistant. And as I said, your identification and other materials will be turned over to station militia when we reach Rock House. Do you have anything further to say?
No, sir.
Right then. Get to work.
She had plenty of time locked in her tiny cubicle with its blank walls and hard bunk to realize how close she had come to complete disaster. And how close it still was. Suppose the mate decided to come after her, too. He didn't, but she slept badly the rest of the trip. Brun discovered that Rockhouse Major turned a different face to transient crew suspected of impersonating rich girls. Her captain had contacted station militia, and she found herself and her papers in a dingy, cluttered office, watched by a bored but obviously capable young person of doubtful gender with a sidearm.
If I could just make a call...
People in uniform wandered in and out.
If I could just make a call...
Emotions suffused the air of the station. Boredom, hostility, defiance, fear.
If I could just make a call.
Finally, a tired-eyed older man appeared, looked at her, and shook his head.
Come on.
He led her to a proper ID booth, where in only a few minutes, her retinal scan, fingerprints, and other data confirmed her papers. He shook his head again.
You really are Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. Would you mind explaining what you were doing hiring on as transient crew?
It was an adventure.
Brun realized now just how silly that sounded, and she didn't seem able to find the insouciant tone she had cultivated in past years. He just stared at her, a tired man who clearly wished spoiled rich kids wouldn't waste his time.
Do you need anything?
No. If I could have my things.
Yes, just sign here.
Her credit cubes and strips, itemized, lay on the sheet he pointed to. She started to sign, and he pointed, making it clear he wanted no mistakes. She checked then and found nothing missing. Her battered little duffel, with its few changes of clothes, seemed full enough, and if it wasn't, she could buy replacements.
The captain said if you were legal, he'd deposit your pay, less a fine for brawling. What'd you do, if you don't mind my asking?
Another crewman tried to jump me. I broke his nose and wrist. Stupid, I should have seen it coming.
I don't know what it is you kids are looking for. You've got everything. Why look for trouble?
I'm sorry. I was stupid. I'm going home to admit it. Is that all right?
This time he really looked at her, and his eyes warmed.
I'm glad you weren't hurt. We see enough kids getting hurt.
Out in the concourse, Brunn was still a scruffy transient spacer to look at, dirty and shabby, with an ordinary scuffed duffel over her shoulder. She ambled along, relaxing a bit in this familiar territory. First, she would get something to eat, then a shower. No, a shower first, then call Ronnie. No, call the estate downside and get someone to send the shuttle up. She slowed as she came to a bank of public communications booths. She put her duffel on the shelf of an empty booth and started to close the door. Someone leaned across from another, a big, bulky man who looked both frustrated and dangerous.
Hey, you came out of that militia station, didn't you?
Yeah.
You seen a rich bitch youngster in there? Kind of throws a weight around?
No. All I saw was this fat cop trying to make out I was somebody else.
Damn it. I'm supposed to find this girl, loudmouth blonde, they say, real stylish, some mucky-muck lord's daughter. Are you sure you haven't seen her?
Not me. Is that the only militia station?
Nah, worse luck. Where are you in from? You perm crew or transient?
Transient now.
Brunn held up her well-calloused hand.
Signed on to a shit shoveler as a cook's assistant, and then they had me down in the stores 3 shifts out of 4. I didn't leave home to be some cow's personal assistant.
His eyes lost interest after a long look at her hand.
Yeah, well, I guess you didn't meet any daughters of the aristocracy shoveling shit, did you?
He moved away toward the militia station entrance. Brunn could not move. She had to move. If he went in, if he talked to that man, he would know. She picked up the headpiece, put it back as if uncertain, and moved on down the concourse. How could someone like that be looking for her already? Had something happened? She lengthened her stride, almost ran into someone, pausing to look in a display window, and told herself not to spook. The captain had queried ahead about her. Anyone who watched the militia regularly might have overheard. As long as she got off Rockhouse Major before that dangerous man could find her, she should be safe. She took a slideway, then a tram, putting a sector and 2 levels between her and the militia office before she dared stop at another comm booth cluster. This was higher income territory, though her scruffy clothes weren't that unusual. No used clothing stores here, but also none of the high-priced places that expected you to know their names. Display windows showed the latest style. She'd been gone long enough for them to change. Thigh boots? Laced socks? Tunics were longer, dresses shorter, and someone had decided to ignore the waistline again. She stared at a long tunic patterned with zigzags of pale pink on pale green over pink slacks as she waited for the connection to go through. She had decided to start by warning Ronnie.
Yes?
It sounded like Ronnie's voice, but a very cautious Ronnie. Brunn hoped it was. Ronnie she might influence, but anyone else in his family would lecture first and listen afterwards, if then.
Ronnie.
Yes, who is this?
It's me, Brunn. Bubbles, you know. Don't say my name, don't. I'm up at Rockhouse Major, and you're in great danger, and so is your family. Don't say anything. Pretend I'm someone else. George, maybe.
I was expecting a call from Jerry, that is. I don't really have time to chat right now. Listen, George, why don't you call me back later?
Ronnie, you must listen. It's critical. I'm being followed. Your aunt has remembered who did it to her.
Then she's not pregnant? I don't believe it. And if she is, it's certainly not mine. Who does she think she is?
Brunn grinned. Ronnie had an unexpected gift for this.
Lorenza. You know, the fluffy one with the important brother.
Oh, I say. Surely not. Harmless as a... And besides, she's here.
Now? Oh, Ronnie, believe me. Poison. Don't take anything she offers. Get out of there now. Get George. He's in danger too. I'll explain when I get down.
Though how she was going to do that without using her ID and thus triggering pursuit, she didn't know.
Well, of course we'll come. Short notice, no bother. Anything for the royals, what?
Don't overdo it. Assume she's listening.
Read my lips. It's no problem. We'll be there. Pick a number.
That old game. Now, what were the shuttle slot codes for this station? The booth had local datanet access. She punched up the information she needed.
E19 or 21.
Be there soonest.
Brunn put down the headset. Soonest gave no real idea of how long it would take Ronnie to extricate himself from his house, find George, get to the family shuttle, file flight plans, and get here. Right that moment, she wanted him here instantly. Someone she knew, someone she could trust. She was getting very, very tired of adventure. Ronnie closed the satellite circuits carefully and clicked off the privacy shield. It wouldn't have been hard for someone to tap into that unscrambled call if they'd had a mind to. He'd better assume the worst. His mother, in her long lace gown, stood at the door of a room full of older women, all similarly dressed. They were eating, stocking up for an evening at the theater.
Ronnie, dear, who was that?
A fellow at the regiment. Sorry, seems something has come up.
Oh, no. I was counting on you, dear. Why can't they get George or someone else?
I'm supposed to pick up George on the way, actually. Sorry, Mother, it's rather urgent.
What, dear?
Now, Mother, you know I'm not supposed to talk about regimental business.
Her face clouded. She opened her mouth. He gave her the old smile, the one that always melted her.
But I will tell you, because I know you won't gossip, that some fellow's gotten in a bit of trouble about this girl, claims she's pregnant, claims she can prove who's, you know.
Ah, but you have the implant, and the law doesn't...
There's law and there's family. All of us who, knew her, as it were, must confer with the regimental legal staff. Terribly confidential. You won't tell any of your old cats, will you?
It wasn't you. You and Rafa.
Nothing to do with me and Rafa. A wild party a while back. I know I didn't reverse my implant, or even know the girl. But there could be a claim if I don't go in and have it checked out. And they've got the gene militia, or whatever they are, standing by. Oh, remember I told you George and a few of us were taking the shuttle up after the opera? I think we'll just go after this. It's too much trouble to stop back by.
Ronnie was appalled at his own invention. The story seemed to be sprouting branches and luxuriant foliage in all directions. He could almost see the young woman he had supposedly partied with, although her motivations wavered. Was she trying to claw her way up the social ladder from a not-quite-important family, or was she a muckraking journalist out to expose the foibles of the rich and notorious? She had a sister in entertainment. She had worn purple that night. That had never happened. She had a fake diamond collar.
Be careful, Ronnie.
Of course, Mother.
In ways she would never know, he intended to be very careful. He was already in evening clothes, and he didn't have time to change. As he went toward the door, he saw Lorenza gesturing to his mother, and shivered in spite of himself.
But Lorenza, are you sure?
Brunn is sure that my aunt is sure, and that's enough for me, at least until we can talk more to Brunn. And she's being hunted, she says.
Lorenza. Dad needs to know this. He's at the office.
Call from the shuttle. We've got to go. I told Mother an incredible lie about a pregnant girl accusing half the regiment, and all of us having to have genetic scans. And if she calls, even though I told her it was all being kept quiet...
Well, the Colonel will have cats, and then he'll have us for breakfast. Right, I'm ready. But you'll stick out like anything up there.
George dug into his closet and bundled up another shirt and a pair of casual slacks.
We'll take these along. You can change on the shuttle while I call.
Ronnie reflected that George was a good deal less odious lately. Of course, he had been through that mess on Cerealis, and being shot in the gut was, according to the redoubtable Captain Serrano, a specific for youthful idiocy. Still, George had been odious for years. He had not so much turned over a new leaf as uprooted an entire forest. On the shuttle trip to Rockhouse Major, Ronnie told George all he knew or suspected and had kept from him before.
Brunn said if anyone else knew my aunt was conscious inside, her life would be in danger. I couldn't talk to anyone. I thought it was because she'd gone to see the king about Gerald.
About the prince? Why? Just because he showed up on Cerealis?
No, because on the trip home I noticed something.
Even now he was reluctant to tell George. But if the worst happened, someone had to know. And he had begun to think George was involved, had been from the beginning.
Do you remember that term when you nearly flunked all your subjects?
Not as clearly as I should, but I've heard about it often enough. My father insists it proves the need of diligent application. That's his term, and even the brightest boy can't skate by forever on native brilliance. The masters, well, you remember. As far as they were concerned, I was a typically lazy, careless, spoiled young brat. I thought I was working harder than I ever had, but nothing came of it. I suppose they were right, and I was fooling myself, thinking I was working. Daydreaming, maybe.
I think you were right, George, and they didn't recognize it. At 13, they expect boys to slack off, daydream, hang around, making mischief with others. So when your grades dropped, that's what they said. But I think it was something else.
What then? Hormones?
No, at least not your native hormones. George, this is very secret.
Right. I nearly flunk all my courses, and it's on my permanent records, and it's now a great secret. Nobody knows except you and every other boy I was at school with, all the masters, my family.
George's talent for being odious had not, Ronnie realized, vanished. It had merely been in hiding.
Shut up, George! I think someone made you stupid for a while on purpose.
Made me stupid? Why?
Then that handsome face changed, became more like his father's.
Oh. And you said something about the prince. And he changed schools.
And got a reputation for silly-ass idiocy, like that quarrel with me.
Ronnie reflected that his own end of that quarrel didn't argue for any great intelligence either, and flushed. But George didn't take that up.
The prince is stupid. The prince is... But he can't be, Ron. Someone would have noticed. Someone would have told the king.
Aunt Cecilia did just that, after we got back. On her usual high horse about it, too.
And then she has that stroke you say wasn't a real stroke. Like my term of being stupid, it wasn't real stupidity. Like the prince.
George looked at Ronnie with dawning comprehension.
Isn't really stupid. Not on his own.
But mine went away. Why didn't the prince's? Because someone wanted him to stay that way. And it had to be...
They stared at each other.
The king.
Oh, dear.
Ronnie remembered that he had planned to change and began pulling the studs from his dress shirt.
Oh, my. We are in trouble.
George, with nothing to occupy his mind but the problem at hand, leaned back in his seat.
If your aunt claims Lorenza poisoned her, and if that's why Lorenza poisoned her, then Lorenza may have done it to the prince.
Ronnie paused, his shirt half undone.
Remember that scandal a few years ago about the Graham Scholaris?
Of course. Dad defended the old man.
What if Lorenza supplies all sorts of useful poisons, chemicals, not just to the crown, but to others?
What, a medieval poisoner in our midst? That's awfully dramatic, Ronnie.
So is a stupid prince kept that way for years. So is my aunt's collapse.
Point taken.
George frowned at him, and Ronnie remembered he hadn't finished changing. He tore off the dress shirt and shrugged into George's casual one. A bit tight across the shoulders, but not enough to matter. He buttoned it slowly, still thinking.
Something else I just thought of. Remember when Gerald's older brothers died? That assassination and then the duel?
Yes. Do you think they were stupid, too?
No. I remember, though, that was when we were, what, 12, 13, along in there? Before your bad term, anyway. And Jared was almost 30. There was talk of having the Grand Council Familias agree to his secession in advance.
I don't... Yes, just a minute. I think they actually did, and then rescinded it after he died, so it wouldn't interfere with Nardril's or Gerald's succession later.
I remember Gerald getting lots of visits from his brothers right before that. Picnics and so on. Remember? He wanted to ask us along, and his brothers said no, and he was annoyed with them. Then afterwards, he was all excited about something he wouldn't tell us.
I don't remember any of that.
George tossed Ronnie a tie.
Here. Put on this anachronism. That shirt needs a reason to look tight across the shoulders.
Ronnie stretched his neck and worked the tie into position.
But I remember, and you and he were thick as anything for a week or so, you were grinning all over your face and wouldn't tell me.
Was that the time you tried to get it out of me by twisting my arm?
No, we already knew that wouldn't work. No, we tried bribery, an entire box of chocolate. You scoffed the lot and refused to divulge. You don't remember?
No. Only it was next term I had trouble. You don't suppose someone really did drug me, and it took the memory, too?
I know Gerald avoided you that term. You'd gotten involved with those Hampton Reef boys.
I do remember them. Nasty beasts. And then the next year I couldn't scrape them away. Thank heavens they transferred at midterm.
We're in the Rock House major approach now, gentlemen. If you'd take your seats, please, and prepare for docking.
Brunn wanted a shower, food, and sleep in that order, but ahead of everything else in her personal queue was safety. She changed levels and sectors again, finally choosing a spacer's hostel down the row from the one Harris had used before she left. She didn't dare use that one, in case someone was watching it, or the clerk recognized her, unlikely as that seemed. Cleanliness felt wonderful, better than food, and she'd just as soon sleep, she decided, stretching out on the comfortable bunk. Ronnie couldn't possibly get here for several hours, probably 6 or 7. She could sleep safely at least 2 of them. The timer woke her from the kind of vaguely unpleasant dream that isn't a nightmare, but leaves a dull, foreboding feeling behind the eyes. Another shower cleared most of it from her head. Now she was really hungry. She checked the time. If he really had left home right away, if he had gone straight to the family's shuttle, and if they'd gotten priority clearance, Ronnie might be arriving within the hour. She would head for the shuttle deck and get something to eat there. The timer informed her it was partway into second shift. After main, some called it. Both names were on the timer's dial. That meant the station equivalent of nightlife, including the night crawlers. Brunn dug through her duffel for possible outfits that wouldn't be too visible and wouldn't say the wrong things. She didn't want to be transient crew anymore, and she certainly didn't want to stick out as Lord Thornbuckle's daughter out being adventurous. She just hadn't brought the right clothes. But she had brought enough makeup. Down the way, she found a clothing store for people with no imagination. Clerk's clothes, maybe. Good old boring classic beiges and browns and grays and dull blues. It was a struggle to make herself buy what she automatically disdained. The blue slacks, the beige top, the brown belt, and sensible brown shoes. In the mirror, she looked like a low-income copy of her mother. If you were born with those bones, plain looked classic. What could look just plain, plain? A different blouse, blue and rose flowers scattered loosely on beige, and a bit too tight. Beige shoes with little gold doodads on them. That helped. They made her feet hurt, so she walked differently. She could do the rest with makeup. When she reached the shuttle deck, the status boards showed 3 private shuttles on approach, identified only by registration number. Great. She had never known the registration number of Ronnie's family's shuttle. Then one of the other numbers sank in. That was her family's shuttle, the same one she'd taken Cecilia up in.
Oh, was Ronnie crazy enough to borrow that one? They'll be looking for it.
Brunn ducked quickly into one of the fast food outlets that opened onto the concourse. She ordered the first thing she saw and took it to a window seat. Between bites of something greasy and meaty coated with something doughy, she scanned the area for the man who had spoken to her before. Of course, he wouldn't have been alone, and she had no idea what other watchers might look like. The food helped. She felt her courage returning. She was clean and fed, and didn't look anything like her earlier self. Either of them.
Sorry we're having to wait. There are quite a few arrivals just now.
Private shuttles?
Yes, Lord Thornbuckles is just ahead of us.
George and Ronnie stared at each other.
Why did she call me if she was going to call the family shuttle? Or did I misunderstand? We were trying to talk in a sort of instant code.
I suppose it could be another family member, though that's quite a coincidence. And they usually bring the family yacht in over at Minor to avoid the traffic.
The yacht's not operational, don't you remember? Some kind of harebrained terrorist attack or something.
So it could be one of the others, come by commercial passenger service.
George peered out the tiny window. Ronnie, looking past his head, could make nothing of the strings of lights. Finally, not that long by the clock on the forward bulkhead, he felt a slight bump of docking. When the status lights turned green, he led George out the access tube to the reception lounge. Across from the access tube was the door into the public corridor that led to the concourse. A status screen above it showed that Lord Thornbuckle's shuttle was docked to their right. Ronnie headed that way, receiving a polite nod from the man at the door to that lounge. He didn't see Brunn anywhere. Brunn saw Ronnie and her brother at the same moment. Buttons, looking happy and relaxed, with his fiancée Sarah on his arm, strolled along the concourse from the commercial gates toward the entrance to the private shuttle bays. Ronnie was just coming out, looking around. Brunn had just had time to notice Sarah's outfit, flowing rose silk, a corsage of fresh white roses, when Sarah staggered and the corsage blew apart, leaving a single red rose. Buttons threw himself on top of her. The tough-looking man who had spoken to Brunn rushed at them, weapon in hand. People in the concourse panicked. Some dove for the floor. Brunn pushed away from the table and tried to get to her brother, but the people in the doorway were backing away.
Hey, out of the way!
She pushed and shoved, using elbows and sharp kicks to move them. Over their heads, she could see Ronnie turn toward the trouble and then make a flying tackle on the armed man. George erupted from the corridor behind him. The two of them were on the attacker by the time Brunn got free of the tangle and staggered across the concourse. She hoped someone had had sense to call the station militia and medical help.
Help me! She's bleeding!
Brunn fell on her knees beside him and unzipped her duffel, pulling out her last clean shirt and stuffing it in the wound.
Here.
The months she'd spent with therapists and doctors gave her more knowledge than she wanted of what lay behind the blood. But Sarah had a pulse and was breathing. Buttons looked at her and his eyes widened.
What are you doing here?
I'm saving Sarah.
Sarah opened her eyes.
Really hurts.
And then she closed them again. Typical of Sarah. No wasted words, no unnecessary fuss.
It's my fault. He thought I was Sarah. I mean the other way around.
Who?
But he had already turned toward the continuing tussle between Ronnie and George and the attacker, who had acquired allies from points unknown. Just as it looked like spreading into a wholesale brawl, the militia arrived.
Bring the police department!
The same tired-eyed man Brunn had met before took their statements after Sarah had been taken to the station clinic. His gaze sharpened when he recognized Brunn and the blood on her clothes.
Did you expect to meet your sister here? Was that your purpose?
No. Sarah and I had legal business to transact before our wedding. Brunn's been out of touch quite a while. I frankly didn't know where she was.
Ronnie and George were attempting to look innocent and noble through their bruises.
Ah, and you, gentlemen, you were coming up to meet this young gentleman, perhaps?
Ronnie's eyes slid toward Brunn's. She nodded.
No. Actually, we had come up to meet Brunn. She called me.
I see. You are also...
We aren't engaged, but we've been friends a long time. I didn't want to call our people until I had a chance to clean up and change.
Yes, I can see why. Mother would have had a fit. Where have you been, anyway?
Brunn held up her calloused hand for him to see.
Working as transient crew. I was hoping to get my hair done and so on before she knew I was anywhere around. Besides, there was a little trouble when I arrived.
Do you have any idea why someone shot your fiancé?
No.
I do. I think he meant to shoot me and didn't have a good description.
The man's eyebrows went up.
A man stopped me after I left the militia station earlier and asked if I'd seen a rich young woman in there. He knew my name and a rough description, but the way I was dressed then, he didn't recognize me. It scared me. It's the one reason I called Ronnie.
Well then, miss, do you know why someone might want to shoot you?
No, but it's clear someone did. And since Sarah and I are both blonde and about the same height, he probably figured someone heading for our shuttle with my brother was the right person.
I see. If you'll thumb sign this report, then...
With a sideways glance at Buttons, Brunn pressed her thumb to the pad, and the man nodded.
That's it for now. I presume you'll be available downside if we need you?
Yes, of course.
I'm staying up here until Sarah's released. I don't know how long it will take. If they'll do the regen here or ship her down. Brunn, since Ronnie's here with their shuttle, could you ride with him?
Of course. Do you mind if we come with you to the clinic?
No, that's fine.
He stood and looked about uncertainly. The militia had dispersed the crowd, and the four of them stood alone. Then he looked down at Brunn.
The thing is, I'm still worried about you. Did you know Lady Cecilia had filed for reinstatement of competency?
What? I thought she'd wait until...
No, she didn't wait. It was on the net 4 days ago. There's been an uproar you wouldn't believe in the press and among the families. Dad's afraid she's in danger. And you, of course. We didn't put a query on your ID because we didn't want to call attention to it. So we haven't known where you were.
But somebody did. Or at least they were watching for any word of me.
Yes. Dad's convinced now that you were right. He's had his doubts. But that means that whoever did it will be moving. You and Ronnie are both prime targets. Frankly, I think you'd better get in that shuttle and go. And then stay on the estate. Don't go into town. We don't know just how hard whoever it is will come after you.
But you and Sarah?
Should she tell him about Lorenza now? Or would it make it more dangerous for him? She was too tired to think.
We should be safe now that they know she's not you.
Buttons, there's something we need to tell you. It's really important. George and I think we know...
Not here. Take Bronn, get down to our place, and stay there. I'll be along as soon as Sarah can travel. They'll probably send her down for regen treatment when she's stabilized. Dad's on his way, too.
Buttons turned away with a little wave. Bronn suddenly felt the weight of fear and exhaustion settle back on her shoulders. Her feet hurt.
He's right. Let's go home.
The grounds of the Institute of Neuroscience had lush green lawns and flowering shrubs. A few low domes protruded through the greenery, and a stubby block-like building rose from a grove of trees in the distance. Harris rode a quiet electric car, hardly big enough for her and the driver, from the public transit stop to the entrance.
Seems quite open for what the directories say is on this planet. Spacious, even.
A bomb attack, 30 years ago. The Benignity, of course. They thought they were getting a manufacturing complex. We rebuilt underground, even though that's no real protection against modern munitions. But it was all ugly and crowded before. This way, we have something pretty to look at.
At the front desk, Harris handed over her official documents with the royal seal of the Familius Regnant. She had noticed three nondescript men in the waiting room, Gerald's all, scattered among the other patients.
Are you the patient, Captain?
No, but I would prefer not to explain here.
The clerk managed, heroically, Harris thought, not to peer into the waiting room.
Of course. Perhaps you and... is the patient here?
Yes.
Then perhaps you and the patient would come this way?
Harris gave the hand signal the Geralds had taught her, and one by one they ambled up to the desk, leaned over, and took the colored card the clerk held up. Her eyes widened, but she said nothing. Doctors Koshinsky and Velen, male and female, short and tall, thick and thin, dark and fair. Koshinsky's dark beard was only slightly darker than his skin, and he came up to Velen's elegant silk-clad shoulder. Harris wondered what they thought of her and the clones. The clones had shed their disguises and now wore identical coveralls. They looked like a frieze of tall, blonde princes.
Can you describe the problem any more precisely, Captain?
I thought that was in the King's letter.
Unfortunately not. What it says is that he was given a demonstration of a drug to inhibit higher cognitive processes and its reversibility in a person of his son's age. Then that same drug, he thinks, was administered to his son, causing a relative inability to learn and perform cognitive tasks at the level his innate abilities warranted. Quite frankly, Captain Serrano, we would regard such a use of any method of lowering intelligence to be quite unethical. In our culture, intelligence is respected.
If I understand correctly, the king was given a choice of having his son partially and temporarily incapacitated or assassinated. His older sons had both died, one by assassination and one in dubious circumstances. It was not an easy choice.
Even so. And now I understand he wants to see if the effect can be reversed by someone other than the perpetrator?
That's right. I should also mention that the use of clone doubles is not only unethical, but illegal in our society.
Not here. We grow clones all the time. We've nothing against clones. They have full legal identity.
The problem is, these clones have been trained to be the prince's doubles. Now each of them claims he is not the prince, that the prince is somewhere else. I was twice informed that the person I was taking aboard was the prince, only I have no way of telling the difference. And I think it likely that they are somehow programmed or conditioned not to reveal the prince's identity.
Were the clones also treated to inhibit their intelligence?
I don't know. I wasn't even told there were clones.
Hmm. Then the first step is to examine these young men, with their permission, of course.
Certainly. He won't be able to distinguish us one from another.
Harris had her doubts. Anyone who could scan weapons an RSS ship would miss might well have new and better ways to tell a prime from its clone. 2 days later, Dr. Velen called Harris in for another conference. She had a stack of data cubes and a cube player already set up.
Let me tell you what we've found out so far. Do you have a medical background by any chance?
No, sorry.
Well, I'll do my best. Do ask questions when they occur, will you? Now, we know that the prince is a registered embryo. Now, in the Familius Regnant, that means an embryo guaranteed to carry the genetic markers of the certified biological parents. All known flaws eliminated and enhancements included.
Enhancements?
Legally, all the genes, whole genes, must come from either the certified mother or the certified father. Given the sufficiency of sperm and ova from almost anyone, it's possible to select desirable, even outstanding, gene fragments. Humans are superbly heterozygous. It's only a question of knowing which sequences correlate with which desired trait. But there are practical limits on the quantity of genetic material. Time constraints, for instance. By the time you've located the single recessive gene you want in one of the 50 million sperm you examined, the ovum may be overripe. If it's not to be a gamble, much like the original, you use enhancements.
And those are?
Gene fragments, not whole genes, which means they can be substituted with the usual techniques.
Harris had no idea what the usual techniques were and didn't really care.
For instance, intelligence. Everyone has known since old Earth times that intelligence is not a single entity, a single faculty. There are modules, specialized clumps of neurons which preferentially work with certain inputs.
Like the yacht's scanning computers. This one for detecting one kind of input and interpreting it, and that one for another.
Not really. Or rather, in a way, but not completely. The human brain has developmental preferences, but it's also remarkably plastic. It responds to experience, so that the more experience in a cognitive domain, the more likely that function is to work well. But more important to this patient is what happens when things go wrong.
Harris nodded. She found it hard to concentrate, even though she needed to be able to explain to the king later. What had gone wrong was the prince got stupid. Simple, and, if not repairable, the end of the king's hopes. The doctor talked on, and Harris felt herself falling more and more behind. What was a dedicated neuron? What did Dr. Velen mean by saying that some of them were supposed to die off?
One thing that would work is a protein that blocks the production of a given neurotransmitter by tying up the RNA on which the protein would be constructed. I presume you do know something about biochemistry?
Sorry, my specialty lies elsewhere. I know what DNA is, but the function of different kinds of RNA, that's beyond me.
Dr. Velen looked pained, opened her mouth, closed it, and finally shrugged.
You won't get it. Not in the time we have.
Perversely, Harris was now determined to understand.
Look, if you'll give me time to read something, even a child's version, I'm sure I can learn. It's just that it's so far from my own background.
Right. Warfare. I suppose you know how to kill people.
This sort of hostility was familiar.
Well, yes, but so do you. Any medical researcher knows as many lethal tricks as I do. No, my expertise is in the equipment and the personnel. I must know the interactions of all shipboard systems.
Engineering.
Yes, it is. So is clinical medicine, to my view. Know the systems, recognize when something's wrong, and know what to do about it.
Well, I suppose. We like to think of ourselves as researchers, too.
I'm sure you are. So are some of us. Space Fleet officers, I mean. A friend of mine solved a century-old problem in oxygen exchange systems. That's never been my talent. I can keep on top of existing systems, but I'm not an innovator. But I know and respect those who are.
Well, if you really want to know, then, there's an undergraduate course on Cube. I have a copy because my second daughter is going to be taking it next year. Or if you want a fast take, there's the induction trainer.
The induction trainer gave Harris a headache. Still, it was fast. She agreed. When she came up from the course, the first thing Harris thought of was not the prince, but Lady Cecilia. She had a glimmer of what might have been done to her, although she recognized her own inexpertise. This time she talked to Dr. Koshinsky. Dr. Velen was, he said, busily working out sequences. And now Harris understood, in principle, what that was and why it was important.
Could that, the same mechanism, cause a stroke-like appearance in an elderly patient?
Dr. Koshinsky rocked back on his heels, considering her suggestion.
Not by itself, I wouldn't think. It could maintain that appearance, but the onset would be too slow. Why?
Harris explained all she knew of Cecilia's condition.
One of her visitors described what looked like an implanted delivery system for drugs. That could be the maintenance drug you're talking about.
Is this a political person you're speaking of?
Heavens, no.
Harris wondered, even as she said it, if that were completely true. Lady Cecilia did not choose to involve herself in politics much, but she had, after all, pressured the Crown into arranging the pardon and restitution for convicted military personnel. If that wasn't political power, Harris wondered what was.
She's a very wealthy, very independent elderly lady. My former employer, in fact. In perfect health, so far as anyone knew. She collapsed in what appeared to be a stroke, followed by a coma. But we have reason to suspect that's not what really happened. If she was felled by some chemical attack, could you reverse it?
We'd have to get to her, or her to us. There's no way I'd touch this long distance. Where is she?
I have no idea. I can, possibly, get in touch with someone who knows where she is.
It would be better to intervene as soon as possible. If spontaneous recovery doesn't occur in the absence of the neurotoxins, degeneration can occur from inhibition of response.
I don't know how her recovery has gone.
Find out. You're sure this was an intentional injury?
Reasonably sure. She had made some enemies. In fact, I was suspected of having done it. Her family, a very prominent one, was upset because she mentioned me in her will.
There was no real advantage to concealing Cecilia's identity.
Lady Cecilia de Marktos.
Koshinsky was nodding before she finished the full thing. He recognized the name.
I see. But you want her to recover?
Yes. Not only is she my employer, she's my friend. She's remarkable. You'd have to know her.
As a matter of fact, I know a little. My niece is horse crazy, and we gave her the complete set of great riders. So I've seen Lady Cecilia, at least as she was at her peak. If you don't know where she was taking me, I suggest a possibility. She used to own a stud farm and training facility on Rotterdam.
She wouldn't be there. It's too obvious. She'd have been taken somewhere less...
The thing is, you could find out without much trouble. She's known and loved in the world of those who breed and train performance horses. They don't care about politics on the whole, but they do care about each other. They will know where she is, I'm sure. And while they may not tell you, they'll tell her friends you're looking.
Do you need me here while you work on the prince?
Not really.
Then I think I'll go find her. Bring her back. You have adequate security here?
We hope so.
Then I can leave the prince and his clones, or the clones without the prince. And by the way, haven't you found any way yet to distinguish them?
Not yet. They claim they were told it was possible, but none of them knows how it worked. Or so they say. It's a pity. These young men seem to think they have no right to exist without their so-called prime. It's an ethical problem for us, because we would normally attempt to give them the psychological support they need to become independent, fully functioning adults. Yet this is not what your king asked for in his contract, and we suspect he will not approve that service. You are only his agent, I realize, but if you're going back to Familia's space, I hope you can convey to him our very grave reservations. We would like to have some guarantee that these young men will be granted some sort of citizenship when they return.
Do they need all three clones to untangle them?
I don't know. Why?
Well, because, like you, I worry about assassination. If those doctors are so convinced the clones should be treated like everyone else, then they aren't going to confine them. After all, they're healthy, full of energy. What do you want to bet they'll decide to give them outpatient privileges or something? I agree we should try to find Lady Cecilia and bring her here if she wants to come. But even though the king lied to us, we still have that obligation.
So what do you suggest?
Take one or two of the clones with us, openly. Then if someone tries to wipe them out, they'll only get two, or one, whatever.
Ah, so which should I take?
I don't see that it matters. Let them choose.
Get us ready, then. I want to leave as soon as possible.
I suppose I should warn you that Oblo's made some new friends.
What this time?
Well, he got a good deal on a new ship identity that he thinks will hold up better than the last one. We're now the Harper Valley, in case you want to know.
This court is now ready to record the first session of the competency hearings of Lady Cecilia de Marktos, who is petitioning for the reversal of the order of guardianship imposed by the Crown Court after medical certification of irreversible coma. Present in the court...
Present in the court were local magistrates, attorneys Bunny had hired on Lady Cecilia's behalf, her medical staff, and attorneys representing those who had originally instituted the Order of Guardianship, her family. Later, if this court ruled in her favor, she would have to do the same things again in another court. But for now, Bunny thought it should be enough. First, her medical team instructed the court in her signal system. The shoulder jerks, the knee movements, the hand clasps. They demonstrated the lap comp she would use, and everyone present got to try it out. Thus, her testimony couldn't be programmed into the machine. Not overtly, anyway. The synthesized voice had been shaped to sound like hers, from old tapes, but her attorneys recommended that she use both the body movements and the lap comp to provide additional evidence of her understanding and competency. The session began with the same sorts of questions Dr. Cherda had asked months before on the yacht. Did she know her name? Was it Lady Cecilia? This time the magistrate asked using the entire formal string. Did she know the date, the place, the circumstances? She answered yes. She was able, with the lap comp's help, to give the date in both local and universal calendars. Did she know the date of her injury? And had she been conscious continually since? That was trickier. Brunn had finally told her the date when she was supposed to have collapsed with the stroke. She could give that. But she had lost weeks in the first drug-induced coma. They had anticipated this question and had decided that her struggle to answer it honestly, within the limits of her equipment, would stand her in good stead. Her family's attorney, evidently poorly briefed, seemed most determined to prove she was not Lady Cecilia, and then that she had been unduly influenced by Harris Serrano. Her medical team dealt with the first, at least to the satisfaction of that court, by providing the biochemical profile proving her identity. Since such profiles were the standard way of proving identity, the attorney was reduced to arguing that it might have been faked. His argument about Harris was harder to counter. Bunny's attorneys led her through the questions. No, Harris Serrano had not known about the bequest. No, she did not think leaving a yacht to a yacht captain was peculiar. The yacht represented only a small percentage of her total estate, and no interest in the businesses which provided the bulk of her and her family's wealth. No, she did not think Harris Serrano had had anything to do with her accident.
Since we have established this lady's identity and her mental alertness, despite a terrible ordeal, we ask a summary judgment in her favor, reversing the order of guardianship.
Bunny's lawyer sat back down.
Just a moment.
Cecilia wished she could see his face. She was used to judging people by a combination of their expressions and their actions.
All this court needs to consider is Lady Cecilia's mental status. And on that point, I wish to state that I am now convinced that the individual seated there and introduced in this court as Lady Cecilia is in fact Lady Cecilia. Clearly, Lady Cecilia is not comatose. She is oriented in time and place and knows her own identity. But whether that constitutes adequate mental capacity to require that the guardianship be withdrawn and her affairs returned to her sole control remains in doubt.
Exactly what we said.
It is not. You claimed this wasn't even Lady Cecilia.
It seemed reasonable to doubt the identity of someone appearing at so great a distance from Lady Cecilia's last known location, when the management of great assets were at stake. After Lady Cecilia's disappearance, with all the publicity, anyone could have decided to claim to be her. Any lapses of memory could be attributed to the stroke or subsequent medication. It would be very hard to prove in the absence of definitive biochemical identification.
Which, sir, was presented. Now, if you don't mind...
Not at all.
Very well, then. I'm going to address some questions to Lady Cecilia. And I wish you legal gentlemen to keep quiet and not interfere. If I need interpretation of a signal system, I will ask her medical and rehabilitative staff to assist. But I want her answers, indicative of her understanding, unaffected by your comments. If you do interfere, I will consider that adversely in rendering my judgment. Do I make myself clear?
Cecilia braced herself. Now it would come.
Lady Cecilia, Let me explain the situation. If you had come before the first competency hearing as you are now, I am certain that no order of guardianship would have been issued. However, you did not represent yourself, and no one challenged the presumption that your condition was completely disabling and permanent. Indeed, I cannot find a precedent for this situation in the jurisdiction's records, and the only similar cases in the entire Familius Regnant are not, in fact, that similar.
Cecilia realized he was planning to drag everyone through the entire legal history of competency hearings, orders of guardianship, and so on. How she wished she could say, "Get on with it, dammit!"
Reversing an order of guardianship requires some proof that you are capable of managing your affairs. At least choosing and designating an appropriate representative. Is that clear?
Yes.
I want you to explain as well as you are able what you consider your main business interests. Can you tell me something about your affairs? Enough that I know you understand the extent of your holdings.
This they had not expected. Cecilia could feel her lawyers shifting on their seats. She hoped they would keep quiet. She knew, if she could only figure out a way to communicate it. First, the easy signal, the yes for yes, I understand. Then she formed the list in her mind.
85% Equine Foundation. 47.6%.
Laboriously, she spelled on and on, seeing in her mind's eye the logos and prospectuses and annual reports of the various corporations, partnerships, limited and unlimited companies, in which she had once, and should still, have an interest. She was halfway through trying to explain that she had an undivided fifth of an eighth part of the great mining venture on Castilla.
Excuse me, Lady Cecilia.
She stopped short, suddenly aware that her back ached, sweat had glued her blouse to her back, and she had no idea how long she'd been talking.
That's enough. I can see that explaining this is a laborious process with the communication system you now have. Clearly, however, you do know your holdings. I've no doubt you could complete the list, but there's no reason to put you through it.
Objection. She might have been given the list to memorize. It could even have been programmed in.
Overruled. This court sees the effort Lady Cecilia is making. This court believes that effort is hers. I have only a few more questions, madam. For the record, I want to ask you why you willed your yacht to your captain of a short time.
She saved my life. Those words were in the synthesizer. She had insisted on that phrase, but had chosen to leave it as separate words, which she would have to call out one by one.
On Cerealis.
Ah.
Cecilia realized then that Harris must not have mentioned that little escapade. Some of her resentment vanished. With no reason given at all, and she had not wanted to embarrass her captain by mentioning the reason in the will, her family had had only the worst reasons to consider. Ronnie should have told them, but perhaps they hadn't listened to the family scapegrace.
And I presume, Lady Cecilia, that you need access to your assets in part to pay for your rehabilitation and further treatment.
Yes.
And to return to her own life and to control her world again, though she couldn't say it. Yet.
If you please, I'm sure Lady Cecilia's family would be glad to pay whatever medical expenses she has incurred or may incur.
Objection! Her family incarcerated Lady Cecilia in a long-term care facility where she was given no effective treatment.
They were told there was none.
Which turned out to be untrue, as you can see. Lady Cecilia must be free to choose her own treatment, since her choice has already been shown to be better than her family's abuse and neglect.
Gentlemen, enough squabbling. It is clear to this court that the individual seated here is in fact Lady Cecilia de Marktos, that she is not comatose, that she is in fact fully oriented as defined by law, that she is aware of her business interests and capable of communicating her wishes and orders to her chosen agents, and that her medical status is not stable, but evolving toward increasing ability. Moreover, she is capable of giving rational explanations for her actions in the past and present. She is quite certainly legally competent. As you all know, in this very unusual circumstance, it is not possible to overturn an order of guardianship completely with one hearing. However, as of this date, I order that Lady Cecilia's order be transferred to court supervision, pending final revocation. Also, as of this date, Lady Cecilia regains her access to all her accounts, wherever they are. I order that her family give this court a complete listing of all such accounts by the end of this business day. Notification of financial institutions will begin immediately. Within 30 days, I expect a complete accounting of the guardianship to date. At that time, I confidently expect that a subsequent hearing will restore Lady Cecilia's status in all respects. From this date, the family is not to make any decisions respecting Lady Cecilia's holdings without her express permission, given through this court. I will expect Lady Cecilia to name a legal representative of her choice to whom she will assign power of attorney for the purpose of transacting business until her condition improves.
Cecilia felt as if she could float out of her chair and up to the ceiling. Around her, rustles and scrapes and carefully muffled mutters indicated the legal actors reacting to the verdict.
Thank you, sir.
Now you can start living again.
Cecilia let herself sink into the cushioned seat. This was far better than a few months ago, but she'd hardly call it living.
Of course, there's a lot of busy work stacked up.
Cecilia knew what that was. Medical and legal bills that Bunny had guaranteed for her, but that she would now need to authorize.
It won't take too long. As soon as the accounts are accessible again, tomorrow probably for the local lines and within a week for the others, I don't expect the other side to make any trouble at all.
From a firm with long experience in dealing with prominent families, he was not about to badmouth her relatives even now. It had all been a matter of business, he had assured her. Nothing personal, just the need to keep the family assets from evaporating in a crisis. Now, with her credit restored, with the ability to pay her own bills and choose her own medical care, she was surprised to find herself as angry with her family as ever. She still didn't think it was only a matter of business. There had been some satisfaction at seeing the renegade brought low. And while Berenice and Gustav had not actually done the deed, they had consented to the humiliation she'd suffered far too easily. She longed to stride into Berenice's parlor and tell her sister exactly what she thought. With that thought, she realized that in restoring her legal competence, the magistrate had unwittingly told her attacker she was alive, dangerous, and, worst of all, where she was. Panic stiffened her. She fought to reach the keyboard, which, in the car, was out of her reach. Her lawyer was smart enough to hand it to her and hit the power switch.
What? What's wrong?
Lorenza, will, no, ID, will, go, active.
Oh, dear. But it's automatic when legal status is restored. At least she won't know where you are. That's not part of the system. Except, she knows your sister. No doubt your family told everyone about this hearing.
Yes, of course. And worse. She had respected the king's desire for secrecy. She had not told anyone at all what she knew about the prince. She was now sure, though she had no proof, that Lorenza had provided whatever it was that made the prince stupid. If Lorenza panicked and started picking off Cecilia's relatives on the grounds she might have told them something, she might soon be the only person who knew about the prince. It was going to be a working day, not a celebration, and she wasn't going to waste time on busy work after all. Harris approached the Rotterdam station cautiously. She still didn't think this was where Lady Cecilia had been taken, but just in case, she didn't want to blunder into any RSS or law enforcement scrutiny. Oblow insisted that Sweet Delight's latest identity would hold up to anyone's checking, but she preferred not to test it, if possible. The station itself had a scuffed old clunker of a freighter nuzzled into one docking station, and two small chartered passenger vessels spaced around the ring from it. The station master, who ran traffic control herself during main shift, told Harris to dock four slots down from the freighter.
That charter's a bunch of high-powered lawyers. Couldn't come on the same ship, not them. Ridiculous. Bet it comes out of our taxes some way.
Harris suspected they'd found Cecilia, and so had someone else.
several someones else.
And now you. We haven't seen so much unexpected traffic in years. I don't suppose you want to declare your business.
Bloodstock.
After all, Cecilia was supposed to have had a training farm.
We hauled something for Lord Thornbuckle last year.
His children, when Cecilia was aboard. But the station master didn't need to know that.
Ah, your horse people.
Well, I'd hate to claim that. I've got no land of my own. I ride, of course.
Over fences?
To hounds.
Harris hoped this would work the miracle the doctor had mentioned.
Better come by my office, Captain.
Harris left everyone aboard when they docked and made her way alone to the station master's office. There, she found a stout gray-haired woman with only one arm.
No, you may not preempt the scheduled shuttle flight, and I don't care who your employer is. We got people downside who depend on that shuttle. People that live here, and you can just wait your turn like anyone else.
She glanced at Harris and waved her out of pickup range.
Or you can charter a plane. Fly to the other shuttle port and see if they've got room for you. Take your pick. You know Lady Cecilia. You know Bunny, right?
Yes, Station Master.
Forget that. My name's Annie. Who told you she was here?
Nobody. A doctor over in the Gwenny Republic said to start looking here because this was where she'd had the training stable. Frankly, I thought that was too obvious.
But someone would have heard. Good thinking. Situation now is she just got her legal status back. Those snobs I was arguing with were her family's lawyers trying to keep her from it. Probably getting fat fees for managing her affairs.
Harris blinked. Cecilia, well enough to get a competency hearing and reverse the earlier ruling? Perhaps she didn't need any more medical treatment. But surely she'd need her own transportation.
By the way, you might want to avoid those lawyers. First thing they did when they arrived to show a hollow of you all over this station asking if anyone'd seen you. Of course, we hadn't. And we haven't now. You didn't tell me your name was Harris Serrano, and that ship out there isn't the Sweet Delight. Or even that other name. What was it? Oh, better luck. Where'd you get the new beacon? Miscry Refitters over at Golan?
Annie, you'd make a good match for one of my crew. Any way I can get transport down without running into those lawyers coming up?
Why do you think I told them they couldn't charter a special run of the shuttle? Down shuttle leaves in half an hour. They found out its return run is fully booked, and with any luck, they'll be on their way over to Suinen to catch the other one.
Is there a young woman named Brun with Lady Cecilia?
Maybe Brun could figure out what was going wrong with Sirkin.
That blonde girl? Bunny's daughter, isn't she? No, she took off for Rock House a while back with Corey. Well, you don't know him.
Harris wondered what that was about. But she had a shuttle to catch.
My second-in-command's Kenvenard Petrus, and the other seniors...
Harris gave the station master the names. She almost named Oblo instead of Sirkin, but that would insult the girl. And besides, she had an awful vision of what Oblo and the station master could do in the way of mischief if they put their heads together. She would not be responsible for that. Not until she needed it.
None of my people should come onto the station except Skoderin. The others were known to be part of my crew back at Rockhouse Major. I'll tell them, too.
She called the ship and explained quickly. Skoderin, and only Skoderin, could leave the ship for anything the others wanted or needed.